Hey y'all, welcome to another episode of Jesse's Fireside Chats. I briefly did an episode on elections during our 7-part series on the Great Debate. But in this episode, I'm going to more fully discuss my thoughts on the way we do elections and voting here in America in general. So, buckle your seatbelts. This episode is called Elections in America. Let's get started. So, before we get started, I have a couple of quick announcements. First, I put it up on the page that voting here in Indiana, early voting, begins October 7th. I don't know about other states, but that's the way it is here in Indiana. So if you live here in Indiana, please make sure you are registered to vote and make sure that when voting opens up, make sure you go out to vote. I've been very clear that we should not rely on politicians or the government to solve all of our problems. There are many issues with that kind of thinking, and it's something that we as a society need to unlearn. But whether you believe that or not, this election is serious. I can't help but come to that conclusion, seeing just what kind of stuff the left has been advocating here lately, and I don't like to fearmonger, but I can't help but conclude, based on their own words and their own actions, I can't help but conclude that if they win, they might threaten some of the most important things in our life. For example, literally threatening the lives of more unborn children. Many are already being killed en masse in many states, and if the left takes over, who knows what they might do. They might pass some sort of federal law that allows for more abortions. They might also go after free speech like the people in the UK and some other countries around the world have been here lately. They certainly won't be a friend to reliable forms of energy, such as fossil fuels. And they might even declare what they call a climate state of emergency, which is basically, they use the myth of fake climate change, just like they use the fake COVID as an excuse to grab power. And in the case of the climate stuff, they might not relent quite as easily as they did in 2020, 2021. They might continue the power grab for even longer and have even more irreversible consequences as a result from that. Like, they might try to mandate what we eat and where people can travel to, and who knows? We just don't know. And so in order to prevent that kind of disaster, it is important that we get out and vote against this agenda. Okay. The other announcement, that's a bit of a lighter note, is I have created a group for listeners of this podcast, and even people who might not listen yet but might be interested in these topics. In this group, I called it Fireside Chatter. Feel free to suggest topic ideas for episodes, provide feedback on past episodes, share anything that just might be relevant to the topics that we've discussed, and, heck, even, like, politics in general. And even if you're disagreeing with me, even if you think that what I'm saying is not at all what you believe, feel free to say that, just as long as you're being civil. Love thy neighbor, be respectful. And please pass both of these announcements on to your family, friends, anybody that might be interested in either one, especially the voting one. That one's really important. We need to get people out to vote. So, speaking of voting, the first complaint I have is that some people, especially on the left, think that it's somehow racist to require voter ID. That is utterly ridiculous. Because, first of all, any race can get a voter ID. There is no law that I'm aware of in any state that says that black people or Hispanic people or Asian people or white people or anybody can't get a voter ID because of their skin color, national origin, or anything like that. As long as you're a citizen and you can provide the necessary proof, you can get a voter ID. It doesn't matter what color your skin is. Heck, you could probably be bright pink with purple polka dots and still get a voter ID if you met all the other requirements. So the idea that it is racist to require it is baloney. And not only that, but you need an ID for anything else. They don't make IDs just for voting. I've never heard of that. I mean, even voter registration cards, I haven't really heard of those being used a whole lot these days. So an ID that you would get that you need to vote, you also need to drive a car if it's a driver's license. If you can't drive, it's a state ID. And then whether you can drive or not, you need an ID to buy or rent a home, get a job, have a bank account, get a credit card, fly on a plane. Pretty much anything that you would need to do to function as an adult in the world, like, you have to have an ID for any of those things, unless you are thoroughly dependent on somebody else to do all of those things for you. And so having to have it in order to vote is not even, shouldn't even be a problem. Because if you have such an ID that you need for all of your other daily adult things, chances are you have that ID somewhere where you know where it is. So there's probably no reason why you wouldn't have it when you go to vote, unless you, like, lost your entire wallet, in which case I think you would have some other issues to worry about. And that's also one of the many reasons why we have early voting. Which brings me to my next point. I am fully in favor of early voting. I know some people on the right are against it, but I actually think that that's a shooting yourself in the foot position to take. Because we need at least a couple weeks for people to be able to vote. Because think about it. First of all, people might have some sort of medical surgery and they can only get it on that election day, maybe. They might have some sort of work-related travel that's pre-planned. Or some other thing. Or it could even be that they have, and this is probably the more likely case, something beyond their control, completely unforeseen, happen on that day. And so would you really want to have people miss out on voting entirely, especially in an election as important as this one, because their car broke down and the cat got sick and the kid has a fever of 102, or the voter himself has a fever of 102 and can't go to work and also can't go out and vote, or he broke his leg, or just some other thing that is completely beyond his control? No, you wouldn't want that, I would hope, especially in an election that has as high stakes as this one. So we need to have a window where people can go and vote before that day so that they can already have their vote in before something beyond their control on election day prevents them from voting. Yeah, bad weather, too. That's another one that could keep an entire community from getting their votes in. If a tornado hits and destroys the polling place. Now, that being said, I do have a couple of caveats here. First, there are some places that have early voting as early as September for an election in November. if they want to do that, that's their prerogative. I mean, as y'all know, I'm, especially here more recently, I'm pretty, like, small government. I don't think that we should mandate that all communities must have only a 4-week window, although that's the window that Indiana has. It's 29 days, and I think that's a pretty good sized window. It's not too short that people can't plan to vote, but it's not too long. Because the problem I have with a window that's too long, like 3 months or 2 months, is you're voting before you have all the information. We live in such a fast-moving period in our politics that even within the space of a week, you can have several major events happen. Now, granted, at the same time, most people already know who they're going to vote for, but some people are undecided. And if you're undecided and you go vote 2 months before the election, and then within the space of 2 months, you have 8 unprecedented things happen in our politics, that might have affected your vote. And once you voted, you can't go change your vote, which makes perfect sense. You shouldn't be able to, because I shouldn't even have to explain that. But yeah, if you go vote 2 months before the election or 3 months, you're voting before you have all the information. And I think that that's not quite, it doesn't sit well with me. And then the other thing is with early voting, I have no problem with it if the state already allows it, or if the state didn't previously allow it, but the change to the Constitution was made because the people actually wanted that change to be made and made that known. Either like sent a petition, or they had a ballot measure, or they made it known to their representatives that this was actually a change they wanted and not a change that was made just to appease special interests or one party. In some states, like in 2020, for example, in some states, voting rules were changed to allow for more mail-in voting or more early voting or both. And these rules went against the Constitution, and the rules were changed in such a way that they disproportionately benefited one party. And I don't think that's right. And that brings me to the next one, mail-in voting. I don't trust it personally, but I can see why some people might need it. I mean, if you're bedridden or you don't have a way to get to your polling place, or you are very busy, or you're in the military and you're stationed somewhere, yes, mail-in voting should be an option. I don't think it should be universal. I think you should have to opt into it. And I think that we need to make sure that it is being done in a way that does not jeopardize the security of the elections. But I do think there are cases where we do need mail-in voting. I know some people are against it. I don't like it. I'd rather not do it. But it's still something that I support, at least to a limited extent. Also for students who are in school, too. And they could also benefit from it. Another thing is, I think the two-party system we have is entirely inadequate. I think that it does not adequately reflect a diversity of thought that we have in this country, partly because the two parties have both marketed to their extremes and shifted towards their extremes to one extent or another, so that the people in the middle are kind of left out. I also think that there are some people who aren't really in the middle, but also have completely different systems of thought that are just not given their own party that has any degree of airtime. For example, people like me that are socially conservative libertarians, we don't have our own party. I mean, we might lean towards one more than the other, obviously, if we're conservative, but, like, we don't really have our own party. And so we're kind of just dragged along. And I'm not exactly sure how we change that, how we fix that. But it is something that has been a problem for decades. Another thing is, I think we need to crack down more on non-citizens voting. I don't know the exact statistic of non-citizens who have been voting, but I do know that it is a problem. And I think that there needs to be more attention brought to that problem, because elections were designed for citizens to vote on who will lead them and on measures that will affect possibly their day-to-day lives, or at least the day-to-day lives of some, if not all. And so I think that when you have non-citizens making those decisions, that is dangerous. And then the final main issue that I had on this topic is that, as I mentioned in the last part of the series on the Great Debate, I think it should be perfectly reasonable to question or challenge the results of an election, and you shouldn't be considered a traitor for doing so. I mean, you shouldn't also be called an election denier if you do that either. I mean, yes, there does hit a point where you've run your course, you've done all your appeals that you can, and at that point you do need to admit, hey, I lost this one, even though I may not trust the result or may have reason to suspect. But even then, I don't think you should be called a denier. I think that's an example of extreme language. And I especially think that you shouldn't then have that questioning of an election follow you for years and years after the fact. I think it was a mistake for the moderators to bring up 2020 when it's 2024. And so 2020 was therefore 4 years ago. I shouldn't even need to explain that, but apparently it needs to be said, because some people don't get it, or maybe they do get it, but they wanted to make this point for the 20 millionth time, as if we haven't already heard it ad nauseum. And so I think 2020 happened. I'm not exactly sure to what extent there were irregularities in 2020, but I know there were some. Wouldn't quite say it was stolen. I don't quite have enough evidence to support that claim. But whether I did or not, 2020 is 2020. This is 2024. And so I think that horse has been beat to death. And so I think that issue should not be an issue anymore. And I think that if in this election somebody questions the results, we shouldn't repeat the same mistakes that we made in having that follow the person for years and years after the fact and bringing it up every chance we get that this person questioned the results of the election, no matter which side we're talking about. Because questioning the results of an election is not that different than questioning the results of anything else. And it's especially funny to hear the left, who questions even objective truths that we all should know are true, like, for example, the fact that God exists, the fact that men are men and women are women, the fact that 2 + 2 = 4, to hear them then say that it is wrong to question the results of an election is laughable. And that's pretty much all I have to say about that. So, to recap, these are my thoughts on the election. It's the way we do elections. First of all, requiring voter ID is not racist. That horse has been beat to death. and it's tired, and the fact that you need an ID to function as an adult means that, especially since you use the same ID to vote, saying that it is racist to require it to vote is just ridiculous on its face. Also, early voting and mail-in voting are things I support with limits. Also, the fact that non-citizens are voting in elections is a problem, and we need to try to fix that, because our elections were not made for non-citizens. They were made for citizens, and non-citizens should not be deciding who leads us and how our lives are changed by ballot measures or other things that we vote on in elections. And questioning election results should not be considered some kind of unpardonable sin. It should be completely fine. However, that being said, once you've run your course of appeals, once you have done everything you can to question the results, and it's come back that you lost, you should not still be saying you won. You should admit that you lost, no matter which side you're on. But even then, it shouldn't follow you for years and years down the road ad nauseum that you questioned the results of an election that most of us have moved on from. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, or at least become more informed by it. Thank you for listening. Please pass it along to anybody that might be interested. You can find this podcast on Spotify, the RSS feed, and Amazon Music. And feel free to check out the Facebook page and the new group that I've created on Facebook for listeners of this podcast and people who are interested in the topics discussed on the show. Thank you, and have a blessed day. See you next time.